Greetings, friends, and welcome to yet another episode of the Grog Pod Roguelike Podcast, where each one of these we dock onto a mysterious roguelike game, blow it up with ratings, and if it's good enough, revisit it in our final mission episode at the end of the season in our roguelike review tournament. I am your tyrannical space CEO host of the podcast, Scott Berger, and with me are my fellow faceless co-host clones.
This is Will Wright, your bullet sponge.
That's so clever.
Is Colin Smith, a weird little spider guy who's going to jump on your face, kind of.
I was going to be a spider guy, too.
You can be a big spider guy.
I'm just going to end my intro with Shazbot.
There we go.
But who are you?
I'm the embodiment of Shazbottery, which will.
But what's your name?
Oh, I'm Andrew Harshman. Hello. And I'm back. Wow. And that's
glad we got that sorted out.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm glad to have you back. This week we are talking Dead Zone Rogue, released early access, we'll say, April 30th, 2025, and 1.0'd, I guess, August 11th, 2025. This is a game that you can find on the big ones, Steam, Xbox, PlayStation. It'd be neat to see this on Switch, but we'll see. This was developed and published by one Prophecy Games out of Alpharetta Georgia, who have, let's say, quite the story development history, which I'll breeze through here and we'll talk more about in depth after everyone has already tuned out. But in 2020, they launched a game called Prophecy, which was summarily delisted off of Steam. 2023, they were then in charge of Star Siege Dead Zone, which, again, was delisted from Steam. And in 2024...
Are these getting delisted from Steam?
We will talk about it in a second. There's okay. kind of a lot to unpack here. But 2024, Tribes 3, Rivals. And then in 2025, with Dead Zone Rogue. Dead Zone Rogue, your average player of this game has just about 24 hours of gameplay in it. And it... synergizes on the Steam rankings at the number 144th most popular roguelike game on Steam with 9,469 total reviews. Andrew, your space boss has ordered you to send a one-sentence space email description of what one does in Dead Zone Rogue.
Well, Dead Zone Rogue is a game rather similar to a very popular game that we covered somewhat recently, or relatively popular in for our podcast. It's science fiction. It involves a lot of shooting. It of course has a story reason for why you keep respawning and coming back. I'm of course talking about Blueprints. No, I'm kidding. It's this game is a lot like Returnal, but what if Returnal was a first person shooter with better guns, better shooting, a baritone protagonist, and the blessing slash curse of zero level exploration. This is a well-crafted and satisfying FPS experience wherein the typical run, you're going from room to room, which is specifically which room is drawn from a hopper of possible selections. And you're thrown up against a random sort of randomized selection of enemies. And critically, between these battles, between these arenas, you get to pick from different perks and different equipment with some amount of meaningful randomization. But more importantly, quite a bit of meaningful mechanical perks and choices. And did I mention that this game is set in the Tribes universe? What? Excuse me? I played this game for tens and tens and tens of hours. I say Shazbot as on the daily. And I did not realize that this is canonically a Tribes game. What?
Yeah, I think so. The reason why I put a bottle pin in or a stopper in the bottle for like pot, like, okay, there's a lot to unpack here. So Prophecy Games, our developers for tonight, founded in late 2019 as a studio within the Hi-Rez Studios umbrella, who you might know Hi-Rez as the developers of the said Tribes franchise. And I believe they spun off to make their titular game Prophecy in 2020 that I talked about before, which you can't find on Steam, but thank God for SteamDB, because its description, it says, create an army of gods, demigods, and mythological creatures in this auto-battler where no battle is ever the same. And looked like it was actually, like, pretty reasonably well-received. 86% positive, 422 reviews. That's not nothing. I don't, like, for the life of me, I know no idea why it was delisted. But, Andrew, did you have any kind of inkling on your radar for what Star Siege Dead Zone was when it when it launched? Because I mean, you're it's FPS meathead day.
Isn't there? Yeah, and thank you for having me back for an FPS meathead episode. As was addressed a couple of episodes, I was gone because in part because a terrible tragedy transpired in my household. That is. Me spending 69 hours trying to beat Spelunky, outrageous. Very much the opposite of Colin's experience of beating the game, you know, the day after or the next week. It took me like 2 weeks.
To be fair, not Spelunky. I did not beat that the
no,
next
no, no,
day.
But
my traditional game experience yeah, on this podcast, which is where I beat it. Yeah.
Quite right. I'm so glad to be back on the podcast with you gentlemen, and specifically talking about an FPS game. Star Siege, I thought that was like a top-down. There's a game called Hero Siege, and is it Hero Siege? No, I don't know what the heck you're talking about.
Well, no, you're missing the crucial link here. Star Siege Tribes. Tribes.
Now, just for those story. For those who may not be familiar with Tribes, is this the game we played as people in our 30s in middle school? Like the first, like,
this is
the flag game?
December 23rd, 1998 game where you're like, it's like Unreal Tournament, but what if Surf Map from Counter-Strike?
Yeah,
it's the one where one where you launch across the map with rocket launchers or something.
Yeah, basically.
There's different classes, light class, there was the tank guy. Oh, yeah, okay, I'm good, thank you.
Yep. So it's like, oh, what if, again, like, no idea why they delisted Prophecy, but they started working like, hey, let's, maybe a little bit of trend chasing here, I would assume. Because Star Siege Dead Zone is an extraction shooter, much in the same vein as Escape from Tarkov.
Oh,
which I have luckily not had the misfortune of playing. And I don't think anyone else here, I don't know, Andrew, have you dabbled with Tarkov at all?
I've thought about it, but ultimately it just looks too frustrating.
Yeah. And you look up footage from Star Siege Dead Zone, and it is this game. It is 100% this game, the exact same animations, assets, like artistic
Wild.
Style, direction, all that stuff. But whoa, does that game look bad? I mean, like, again, extraction shooters are not for me. I am probably the last person on earth to go and recommend that genre of games to other people. There's probably some bizarro podcast out there. There's probably like a podgrog of only extraction shooter reviews out there. It's like, you guys shouldn't play roguelikes. Those are terrible games.
yeah.
But lo and behold, you know, this was a live service.
Now, when you say extraction shooter, you mean basically like that's like whatever, what's the Bungie game, Destiny 2, that kind of stuff?
Not quite.
What exactly? Maybe I know the term, but maybe missing what the actual
my limited definition. Understanding. My limited understanding of extraction shooters is this: is like, it's like, what if PUBG, but like your equipment that you picked up in any given map was like a progression system, and so like, and there's like maybe very light, mild PvE elements to it. So it's not quite like Destiny in the sense that like. Number one, Destiny's like, for how bad of a game it is, it's still much better. It is more of like a I don't know, like borderline like milsim light PvP.
Oh yeah, very milsim
PvE. But like, I think a stipulation of it is that you have to be addicted to like wall hacks and cheats specifically.
Yeah, there's
for
a bit of
genre.
A cheating problem because the stakes are so high in every run, because you stand to lose all of your gear that you've worked so hard for, and you only have one life generally with these extraction shooter games. And like, there's this whole, the extraction part is that you're trying to, like, you know, get loot or complete missions and then leave the level. And so there's sort of this balance of like, how much do you, how far do you press your luck? How much of a risk do you take staying in the match longer before exfiltrating? This idea, this Star Siege Dead Zone game, I don't know, seems like an okay idea.
Oh, right. What game are we talking about?
Well, we're getting
like a big tangent.
Yeah, we're getting to Dead Zone Rogue. I think it's important to talk about this because, like, there's like some messaging at the end of the game's end credits that's like, thank you players for believing in us and giving us a chance.
Yeah,
and
I was saw just that.
Like, I was like, what? Like, this seems a little out of left field. What was
right.
It's like,
yeah,
it says, thank you for playing and for giving us a chance. Your support means everything. Without it, none of this would be possible. And to our friends and families, thank you for your patience and your belief in us. And I was like, that seems a little like.
I made the same statement to my wife when I beat Spelunky. Interesting. Okay. Yes. This provides a lot of context. I'm learning a whole lot on my own podcast.
So eventually, you know, like, it wasn't working out. Star Siege Dead Zone, not working out as a game. I think the developers realized, like, well, like, we have these good assets and animations and stuff. Like, maybe we just don't like shovel this into the dumpster and just like start on a new indie roguelike platformer. Why don't we just like try to do something with this? And from what I can tell, it basically seems like they just said, all right, forget the extraction shooter. What if roguelite ? Let's see how this works. And
just like find and replace extraction with roguelite.
I mean, we'll probably get into it. There's some aspects that of this game that do feel like a minimum viable roguelite. But I think it actually kind of worked, because from like gameplay footage that I saw from Star Siege Dead Zone looks like painfully bland and unfun. And maybe we'll talk about new player or, you know, initial player experiences here in a minute. But I think, like, from my overall experience with Dead Zone Rogue, I think it worked. And because they basically like said, all right, we're shutting down the servers. Early access, April 30th, like, they're starting with just zone one of this game. And so it's a three zone or three act sort of structure to this. But early access, they're like, all right, we're starting with zone one. We're going to get this like format down and polished. And we're going to give Dead Zone Rogue away for free to everyone that made like a monetary purchase for Star Siege Dead Zone. So it's like,
oh,
you know what? Like, mea culpa, like, we're trying to make right and like make a good game out of this stuff that we built. And hey, you know, you guys spent money on it. Here's a different spin on this. Maybe this will be better. And I think that's kind of what drove a lot of this game's initial popularity. Like 9,500 reviews for this game is a lot. Like, it's a lot. And I think it was largely kind of injected like right at the start from this extreme pivot that they did from before.
Yeah, you could have fooled me. And they did, because I had no idea any of this had happened. And in fact, a fairly big talking point that I have in my notes here was to complain about how god awful the name is. And all of this backstory now explains why it's called Dead Zone. which is like, oh yeah, that's
super generic. Dead Zone Rogue
incredibly.
Is like, it could be anything.
It could be anything.
I mean, I was confusing this game on the regular with another sci-fi first-person shooter room-based roguelite experience called, God, I have to look it up because I can't even remember it, Dead Link.
Oh, yes, that's right, which is another game that's on my short list of games to pick. Very funny, very
that
interesting.
Back-to-back.
Well, that's how inspiring and encouraging that they were able to take all this hard work and
it does
put it into a different design framework.
It does also explain like some of the Like, it doesn't feel like there's much going on with the story, or like that there's a whole lot of like there's a lot of stuff, but it feels a little bit, I don't want to say bland or generic, but it feels like it's there's a lot of cool assets, which makes sense because it was all built for a different kind of game. And then it's just like, oh, it's rearranged, and then you're just kind of running through, which, I mean, I don't think it really hurt the game that much, but it does feel like it's a little bit skin deep in terms of the like, oh, we've reskinned some other stuff, and here's a here's a setting. Here's just a setting. Go forth and shoot the stuff, because that's really what they like. This game absolutely 100% focuses on get good, get gun good, shoot stuff, have fun.
I generally agree. However, hopefully we'll have a spoiler section so we can talk about the sort of ending act of this game, where it has some kind of fun story stuff for my money.
Maybe, okay, so I haven't beaten Act Three, so maybe that's my problem, is that
No, I mean, to be
I had the
clear.
great Act One reveal, so
Great. Well,
yes.
also, I guess, Colin, to sort of set your expectations even more, there's an Act Four coming
Ooh,
in
yes.
early 2026 that I like clicked through it just instinctively, because 90% of the time when you start up this game, it or you come to your starting zone, your dead zone, it comes up with like a, do you want to see what upgrades you got available? I'm just like, click, 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 click. Yeah, just get me through it. And I accidentally clicked through the message that was like, 2026 is coming up. I'm like,
We got to think of it. Yep.
yep.
Thanks for believing in us. Yep.
But
I also probably clicked through that because I didn't realize.
So there's more to come. And I think from my experience of beating the game, like, I am interested to see what they do next, which is like, I think that's like actually like extreme good praise from a game that like looked like a super generic extraction shooter with like borderline, Halo Infinite style asset knockoffs, into something that like I think it feels pretty fun to play.
Pretty fun to play. Well,
I
I would like to briefly mention how I came to this game, and how the method of releasing a free demo is still a viable business option, I think, in this day and age. Because I was served ads for this game on like Instagram or something. It's like, well, that looks kind of fun, and oh, there's a free demo, I'll check it out. Ended up, I don't know, completing the demo, which was Act One, all of Act One, pretty generous offering for a free demo, I would say. And yeah, I didn't know about any of this tomfoolery and all this background development business. And the game has changed a fair bit since that first demo. In like the perk system and everything has changed a fair bit for the better. Basically, more or less, as soon as this game went into early access, I bought it because I enjoyed it enough. And here we are talking about it.
Yeah, and I kind of want to talk about like new player experience and like first impressions, because I think during that demo, like I think it was like Steam Next Fest or something, like I was like, oh, this seems interesting. Downloaded and played the demo, and like I don't know, the first 5 or 10 minutes of it just seemed like bad to me, where it just seemed like, oh, it's just like, okay, Andrew's super hyped on this game. There's got to be something to it, and like I didn't give it its fair shot at first, because you just you run into what looks like a warehouse of just storage crates, and there's just like generic
Sci-fi warehouse. Yep.
sci-fi warehouse filled with sci-fi robots, and you have like a dinky pistol, and you're just kind of
It's filled with
shooting.
the robots from Phantom Menace. Like the low mooks are they that's what they reminded me of, is like, oh, this is the most like grunt robot looking grunt.
It's the moops.
That
Yeah. Sorry. For those in the audience that got that, thank you. But go ahead.
was in the audience. For those on the show who get it. What? Huh? Very good. The
It's the
moops.
Moors, the moops, the
Moors.
moors, the moops. It's a Seinfeld reference. Don't worry about it.
Ah, of
We'll
course,
fix
of
it. We'll fix
course.
that in post, don't worry.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the they even like kind of like put their finger up to their ear and they're like intruder alert in a very kind of like Roger sort of form to it.
That's true.
And I kept thinking like, Christ, is this the whole game? Like, is this just like these like crappy robots with like this crappy pistol? I'm just like, I don't know. Like, what's Baldur's Gate 3 happening with right now? And like, I'm glad, Andrew, that you picked this in order to force me to play it over 2 weeks, because like, I think after like the first few runs that I did do it or did to it, what it did to me, was convince me that this game actually has like, I think, a decent amount of like decision making, at least with like the normal difficulty that I pushed it on. And like the more that I kind of experimented with it, the more I'm like, okay, I can kind of see what it's getting at. I kind of wish there was like more decision making to be had, but that's something that kind of comes with later acts that I'm sure we'll get into.
Indeed. And what sort of decisions I think you're referring to are your weapon choices and your perks. There's like, what are there, two or three like perk subsystems? It's like you're picking your, and I have no idea what they're called, honestly. There are like the main perks.
There's
you are choosing
primary perks, which
primary
are like,
perks. There we
well,
go.
You got your like your, I don't know what the biggest one is, but your biggest perk, which you get like your, what's after the second level or something.
It's almost like your class.
Yeah,
almost,
actually, that's a
good way
better.
To put it.
Yeah, it's like, are you going to be a long distance crit guy? Are you going to be a short distance crit guy? Are you going to be
augment? That's what it's called.
A hip fire man.
Indeed, and these are to the game's credit, right out of the gate, you know, very impactful, which we love to see, and allows you to kind of specialize. It also allows you to, in addition to the things that we just mentioned, you know, long range, short range, hip fire, ADS, critically, there are different elements to pick from.
Well, hold on, before we leave off augments, I like that it happens early.
Yeah.
Sometimes before you even get your first like primary gun, because it means that you are, it somewhat forces you to mix up your class a little bit. So I think it does a good job of like, all right, cool. Let's do a run of a totally different kind than I did last time, just based off that one perk. And
Yeah,
then you
definitely.
build away from it. Otherwise, I feel like this is the kind of game where you could super easily fall into the, I just do the same build every time. But this
Totally,
lets
totally.
you make one decision early that does push you off onto a sort of path. And I liked that.
Can I get a poll? I'd love to know what everyone's preference is. I am a hip firing shotgun kind of guy myself.
Oh, fascinating.
But I'd love to with a pretty heavy focus on grenades. Grenades, things far away, shotgun, everything close. What do you guys got?
Aim down sight. Damage from far away.
I was a big fan of there's like an ammo synergy that you can get where
the ammo synergy is very fun.
Yeah, where, and I was just like, oh man, I've got it dialed in so I can just like hold down the shoot button for like 5 minutes or something crazy. And because like there was one where it's like expanded magazine size plus like you regain,
and this
15...
is no dinky like 5% more, but no, 50%, like boom, right out the gate. And it's just like, oh,
well,
awesome. And I'm already using a minigun that's like got 100 rounds.
We'll talk about percentages here in a minute, but I think like the wacky perk thing that I really liked was like big ammo, like you, every time you sprint, you get an ammo refund. And then when you kill dudes, like that gives you a bonus on top of that. There's another one, like similarly with shotguns where like you kill a dude and then like you have like two shells in your shotgun, but every time you sprint, you get your shell back. So that's like into the chamber. So you don't have to reload it. And it was just like a completely different playstyle experience of like shotgun dudes, like right up in their robot faces, they blow up, sprint to the next one, shotgun, sprint, sprint, shotgun, sprint. Very interesting.
I would say my preferred gameplay style is what Scott was mentioning about the just like shoot from the hip, as much ammunition as possible. And you can pair that with some of the other perk systems. where you can get something. There's one called Smart Missile, where it'll like fire, Smart Rocket, where it'll shoot these extra projectiles that are explosive. And then you can get a thing called Smart Bullets, where on your HUD, you've got these little indicators showing up and shooting extra bullets on top of the you know, storm of bullets that you're putting out from your minigun. And at higher levels, like, that feels outstanding. The FPS meathead vibes are immaculate. So I like that, but just to because I don't pick the exact same answer. Good question, Will, as Scott.
I got a follow up here too, but
The melee build can be pretty fun as well. There's a whole sort of stealth and melee system, which is cool. And I just want to mention real quick, we've just gone around the horn and described our four different unique and engaging and rewarding and fun flow states that this game offers, which is great and wonderful. And we love that, especially in a genre that is sometimes maligned as being samey.
The follow-up question, and this is both unrelated and related. What's your in real life weapon system looking like? Let's start with Colin.
Exactly as I described just a moment ago.
Well, I've definitely got the melee build based off the Warhammer you got from me for my birthday a couple of years back.
Warhammer for Colin, huh?
Yeah, intruder coming to my apartment, they're going to get a Warhammered.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
Yeah, I think so. We briefly touched on
just percentages.
Well, I want to answer. Let's go ahead and use the dodge move on this question, and then
as Americans, we do have access to greater arsenals than other countries. And
thankfully,
great,
we don't have to
great,
fight robots that often yet.
Well, not yet, exactly. But like a more practical question, I guess, or answer for you, Will, is that when I'm out playing airsoft, I am so far from like the reenactment military sim experience, because I have a MP5 that I spent less than $100 on. That's a pretty decent fire rate, and I just got this giant drum mag, and so it's like the least realistic thing possible, because just if I see anybody, I'm just spraying the bushes down, spraying at the trees, and it's just like the more shots I can get down range, the better. So I was kind of joking earlier, but it's not dissimilar to the my preferred minigun play gun style play style in this game.
Wait,
but Scott, what were you gonna say about your holdout weapons that you carry with you at all times?
Oh,
you got
yeah.
your Switch in one holster, and
his bike in the other.
Your Glock,
yeah, I guess,
what have you?
Running shoes.
Yeah, maybe like a torque wrench would be. I've been using that on my cyclocross bike pretty angrily this week. But anyway, the progression systems is what we were transitioning to, because we were talking about builds in this game and it being impactful and meaningful decisions and all that good stuff. But I think the thing that this game kind of sets a sour tone in my mouth for is, like, right when you start this game up, you start in this little hub world, and it's a very nice, like, very well set kind of lobby zone of this ship that's docked onto this other big ship, and you're like, oh, I can't wait to explore and see what's going on here. But you are presented with an email system. You are presented with weapon skins, which I'm like, okay. You're presented with different missions to choose from, and then you are also presented with this like, the last thing that you want to see in rogue style games is like, upgrade this thing to get 1% better at it, which I don't think does this game many favors. I can kind of understand maybe why they put it in there, but that was one thing I saw that I'm just like, oh, this is gonna be one of those games, isn't it, where it's just gonna be like, oh boy, I did like another 45 minute run to make my weapons 2.5% faster shooting, great. But I will give it this credit, because I sang a bad tune about the king is watching, and accidentally like pressing an upgrade system there and being like, fuck, I didn't want that, give me my money back. This one does have a money back system, thank god. And I was like, okay, well, let's try this. I was like speccing all over the place, and I'm like, I'm sure Andrew has a good method for this, but let me just stumble in the dark here first. This doesn't really seem to be working. What if I just refunded all of my points and put them into like grenades instead, and had like no survivability, no shields, and like I couldn't move very fast, but I could just throw a lot of grenades. I couldn't really tell that much of a difference, honestly. So I don't know if there's like an ideal way to sort of spec at first, or if it's just like, just do what feels good,
The
man.
ideal way to spec is to click the button on the one that costs the least money. Like, I'm pretty sure that is the correct way to do it.
It might be, unfortunately.
It's not fun. Also, because they have like a set, if they have like two currency thing in it, they've got the like Triforce money and like components. So a lot of times it's like you can't even really go hard on one of them because you run out of the components, and it's a component for every single upgrade. Which I thought was kind of a weird choice. It's
Yeah, and
like, why wouldn't they let you just spend a lot of money on a certain thing?
it's not like because like Hades is not above this also, where like Hades 1, like the Mirror of Night, also has frustratingly stupid gating mechanisms like this of like, oh, now I can, you know, I can attack 10% faster, but there are like impactful things of like, oh, I can dash twice now,
Yeah, there
or
are ones in the Hades that are like, you aren't playing the real game until you unlock this.
right.
Which is both, I don't know, it's kind of a is sort of a good and a bad thing. It's but I think at the end of the day, Hades' upgrade system is probably better.
Well, it's better if you have to discover it though, right? Like it's fine if everything fits on a distribution of F tier to S tier if you don't know what the tiers are. But if you go in and you're like, I automatically know that one's the best, and then you just do that, then it's like less fun. So the exploration and learning about what system is actually good and fun, that's where a lot of the fun comes in. And that's like with Mega Bonk, which is the game I'm playing now, that's a big thing.
Indeed.
Stay tuned.
And there's another tab on the upgrade page that, again, for 50 hours and for having played this since it was back in demo and early access, you think I know more about this game. There's a second tab which is like you can upgrade your accessories or something. I forget what it's called. But that is where the more important decisions or more interesting decisions for me personally came in, where you're picking things like that smart rocket and those smart bullets,
Superior items.
superior items.
I don't know how you could have forgotten such a distinct and memorable.
Definitely the superior items. I found that was more exciting to spend my currency in between runs because I would find superior items that synergized well with with the class, with the augmentations. And so it was more exciting to be like, oh, I'm gonna make this, more important. And there's like one other one I want to call out is that there's a superior item that makes your weapons. You have three weapons: your primary, your secondary, and your melee weapon, or pardon me, and your grenade. But three main weapons, plus the grenade. And there's like a superior item that makes it so that one of those weapons can proc your other weapons. Elemental options, elemental abilities. So that's really cool when you shoot a big robot and oh, they get frozen and also electrocuted at the same time. And then a weird plasma ball appears and starts zapping guys that are nearby. And ooh, it feels good.
Yeah, it like this game does look really good once like all of the mania starts happening on screen, and it is just like a dopamine tidal wave when you get like a hallway full of enemies and you're just unloading with this like super fast SMG, and it just goes like dee 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 dee, and like it gets that Balatro sound of like the things going higher and higher, and you're like, yes, give me more, give me more.
I do think it has a little bit too much bloom, though. I was saying before the podcast started that like I died be or almost died because like I couldn't see the spider that was like biting my legs because it was just so washed out that it just looked like something on the ground.
Those spiders are troublesome, that's for sure. They
Yeah,
are kind of
you
hard to
look up
see.
and you kind of look down, and it's like, I don't know, there's a white blur at my feet. Is that a spider? Yes, it is. It's doing damage to me.
Last criticism that I want to levy on this game is the difficulty options, where I think like maybe most of us, I don't know, Andrew, if you started on normal difficulty when you were first playing it, but for me, I
Hell
was
no. Oh.
going hard in the paint, as they say. But for me, I was like, all right, I'm gonna start on normal. Let's just see how this feels out. I think I beat Act 1 on normal and was like, okay, like I can kind of get it. And then Act 2 was just steamrolling me. And I'm like, okay,
No.
I think I can kind of see where this is going, where it's like trying to bait me into upgrading all of the meta progression to make this easier. But the game presents normal difficulty as, let's see, it says enemies have standard health damage and movement speed. And then it says it drops 10% more Triforce tech and 10% more purple blob component. Meta progression currencies. I'm like, okay, well, what about easy mode? It says enemies have 25% less health, deal 50% less damage, and move 20% slower. And then hard mode says enemies have 25% more health than standard mode, deal 100% more damage than standard mode, and have 10% faster move speed than standard mode. That gives you like 35% more drops and 50% of the purple one. This feels kind of like a bait and switch to me a little bit of like it really should be like the easy mode is the standard one. And then the quote standard mode should be like, I don't know, dead zone mode or something. And that should be like, oh, relative to the standard mode, enemies have 25% more health, do 50% more damage, and move 20% faster, but you get 10% more tech and 10% more components, which doesn't seem like a good trade-off in my opinion. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have much of an opinion because I like the only reason I selected hard for this and for this game and for like all the missions, you
Because he's a
also has
true
a difficulty
gamer.
slider. That yeah, because it's because I'm just so awesome. No, because I thought, well, the harder the game is, the longer it'll take me to beat, and I'm really enjoying this experience. Let's just stretch it out.
I will say that when the three of us played, sorry, me, Scott, and Andrew played co-op last night, and once, in each level, once Scott and I died, we just got to watch Andrew spectate Andrew killing the rest of the enemies in the level. I did realize that Andrew is just better, significantly better at first-person shooters than me, and it explains a lot on why he likes first-person shooters more than I do.
That it, there's definitely something
I
to
mean,
that. That there's
practice for
gonna
sure
it's gonna
makes
give you a
perfect, but
bias towards a genre if you're enjoying it and you're having and you're good at it, then you're gonna have more fun with it, arguably. And to be fair, that only happened a handful of times before we got overrun.
I'd
There's
like
like
to
a
address the difficulty if I can.
yes, please.
Yeah, difficulty that changes the enemy health as its primary characteristic is fucking stupid. And it's bad. And this is a reflection of not just my own belief, but many other out there that
Oh, yeah.
are critics of gameplay. Like, what you want to have with more difficult enemies is for those enemies to be more intelligent, to have more move sets, and to just be generally hard, like just move, move in more interesting ways, instead of just poking out
More
and
barrel
shooting,
rolls.
they're rolling out and then they're ducking into cover. Like, you want it's a much difficult, more difficult game to make, but difficulty where you're just like, oh, let me just turn up the HP. Now you have Borderlands. You have Borderlands then. You have
Oh yeah, no. We don't want that.
yeah, no, I mean like that's one of my
Literally,
main gripes about many,
totally.
many games is that's not how this should work. And I don't
I mean,
know,
in
it's
general, this
laziness.
game doesn't do that. It cranks up how much damage they do
Oh, okay,
more,
that's another dial,
which
the
can
same dial, same type of dial.
I think it's a less bad dial. It makes you the bullet sponge or less the bullet sponge. But yeah, there's definitely, I mean, I remember back when I was okay at first-person shooters playing Halo in the olden days, where it's like fucking get one hit sniped from across the levels,
Only
the
on hard
Jackal
difficulty or
snipers
legendary. Yeah,
on
those are
Legendary,
those.
trying to do that, and then eventually just being like, maybe Legendary isn't for me.
Maybe the
And we
famous
did it, man.
yeah, I mean everyone remembers how famously fun the one-hit kill Jackal snipers were.
Yeah.
So let's just increment that into difficulty options. No, I think that like the enemy AI in this game is also kind of questionably bad of
It's
like
not question. It's objectively bad. Well,
which
they're
like robots. I
they yeah,
mean,
but
well, that
like
should be even better then.
they call for backup. They say Roger, Roger, and then no one else moves on the whole map.
Interesting point.
Who are they talking to?
It does make me yearn for a
The mines?
Halo game in this format where the enemy AI is smarter. Like, just thinking back to like all those Halo 1 legendary runs, and you know you're held up in like a corner, and you're you know, the grunts are throwing grenades at you to get you out from there. Like there's a halfway decent level of like combat decision making that
evolved
Halo,
combat.
Halo came out in what, 2002?
2001, but yeah.
Yeah.
It was so only 14 years ago. So
yeah. Let's say Halo 2, because that was truly the best of them. 2004. Like, it's been a minute. We've had the technology for a long time. And yes, I know that Halo was like a large studio, but we've gotten so much better at games.
You know who did this right? Metacritic, and this game that's maybe you've heard of it, Slay the Spire, where
never
difficulty with ascension levels is not just giving enemies more health. It's different move sets.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other Hades is the when you add the heat.
I guess
system
that's more relevant, but I had to say the word Slay the Spire so that we hit the quota.
Absolutely.
I feel like Slay the Spire is a harder comparison to make because it is so fundamentally different of a game. Like, I'm struggling to think of like first person shooters that have, I mean, I guess it's just more enemy variety. Is how you have to do it, but that's
well. I think this is like a production budget thing.
Yeah,
I thought about
exactly.
this like way more than I ever thought I would because of this podcast. But it's like if you have like a certain amount of budget for a video game, how much of that is going into your graphics and like overall visual fidelity department and like art, which this game does have a lot, and I think the art and visual fidelity of this game is very good and well done, but that kind of takes up a lot of budget away from things like game programming and, you know, like enemy AI and
fun,
like, and level design to kind of incorporate those and all. And like, and for roguelite games like this specifically, I feel like that's doubly hard to do because like you have to make sure that the experience is different every time. Like it's easy to do in like,
and you have to balance it versus wildly different builds.
Right. It's easy to, well, quote, easier to do for something that's like a linear campaign like Halo, because you know, all right, this enemy is going to be staged here and like they're going to spawn in a very specific sequence or something.
They've got six possible gun combinations.
Right.
Like they're probably going to be using the assault rifle. So.
So it's a harder problem, but there are like there's a decent contingent of lower production first person shooter rogue games that I think do this better. But even actually on the opposite end of the spectrum, higher budget ones, Andrew, you were kind of clowning on Returnal earlier. I think Returnal does this a lot better in kind of every respect, but that's a me ranking. But I think for what this game's history is, with it being a fundamentally different game and quickly re-rolling its perks at the last second to be this, I think with that in mind, it is okay. And it's not like the greatest game ever, but it certainly has a good foundation to build off of, I think.
Are they still developing it? I mean, you said that they're doing Act 4, but like, are they...
Whether or not if they're going to like replace all of like the Roger robots with like actual good enemy AI robots is a good question.
I mean, I feel like the Roger robots are kind of okay. It's
I mean, and like the first act, which I guess we should probably talk about the three zone structure here in a second.
Before we do, so I just want to make sure I'm understanding the complaint correctly, that the AI is not coordinated enough, that you would like to see them hunt you down in the arena. Like I don't know if this is that type of FPS.
Absolutely. I want tactics. I want there to be like, instead of I'm a dumb thing and I move in on a very simple algorithm, like I'm coordinating with others. I have additional move set where like I'm trying to bait you to jump out into the open, or I'm trying to like throw a grenade here. You see that, obviously you have to run out, and I have like my team ready to like, this is complex and it's hard.
I want
to
them to have any level of intelligence.
Any level of intelligence is what I'm
like,
talking
about. Any level.
You're firing a fucking rail gun or a minigun, and they're like the next room over, they're just like
they're just
holding
standing.
Their rifle, like, oh no, sure. Look, there he is. Like when you come around the corner, it's like, did you not hear me? Did you not hear the screams of your brethren dying?
The sound element.
Like, it is as if
interesting.
You're
in space, no one can hear you shoot your robot buddies, I guess.
Like, you have to you would have to rebalance it slightly. You probably have to make all of the enemies a little bit, like, weaker because they'd be coming at you more quickly.
Sure,
but, like,
sure.
There are times where, like, I've finished the level, like, it hasn't given me the clear, like, oh, there must be some guy in a corner somewhere who's just like whistling
Yeah,
his little
Colin
robot
tried to
whistle.
whistle
Doing
there
his
for
robot
everyone.
whistle. I would say that issue is mitigated by the fact that like the arenas are so small and the gameplay is like so fast that you're able to like
I
track
mean,
that person
especially.
down very quickly. But sorry, this is so interesting because this issue didn't even occur to me at any point, because I think what we're tapping into maybe is that this very sci-fi, this very anime, this very like, dare I say, like comic booky cartoony shoot 'em up game, where it's a literal shooting gallery where you're blasting apart cartoony robots with way too much bloom. This is like an arena-based shooter. Whereas what y'all are kind of looking for some reason, even though the aesthetic does not project this at all, in my opinion, is a tactical shooter.
Oh,
We were
a
talking about
better
Escape
version of
from
the game.
Tarkov earlier. Well, that it's a completely different genre,
I
in
disagree
my
completely.
humble opinion. In my humble opinion.
Why, what prevents the, with more effort, with more development time, what prevents the creators of this game from making hard difficulty one where there's just smarter AI?
I think the
I, th
finger
I think
thing
that would
here is the money aspect that you're talking about.
Right, money and fun. That's the as to Scott's point. If you can get money for less fun, you'll do that. And I think that that makes a worse game. What you end up churning out then is a bunch of trivial bullshit instead of like a true masterpiece. I want masterpieces only. I have so much time to live. I don't have time to waste on shit games, except for this podcast, Brent. But that's my general policy, is I don't want to waste time on games that suck.
Well, I think that,
Well,
I mean, Will, wait,
real
hold
quick,
on.
I
Will,
think
what
we're
difficulties do you even
controversial. Look
play
at
on?
this. We've got Serious Sam in one corner where you're just mowing down waves of enemies,
That Serious
and
Sam
the
who played
fun.
45 minutes on normal difficulty.
Hey,
So
you know
this
what? My
whole
opinion
this whole
is in
debate is
like the
moot for
spectacle,
Will.
and then and the sheer quantity of the firefights and everything that's happening. And then in the other corner we have something like First Encounter Assault Recon Fear, where like, oh, the enemies are coordinated and it's a little bit of a slower. It's still very arcadey, but I don't know. I don't know, gentlemen.
No, that's so I'm saying that's not my point. My point is that's taking me out of the power fantasy. I want the power fantasy of there is a horde of robots closing in on my position, and I'm so strong and powerful and cartoon violent that I could destroy them all. And then every once in a while, it's like, oh, but also they can't hear me and they're just standing in a corner, like, oh no, they're actually just nothing. And it pulls me out of the flow state. That's the real
Oh,
sin, in my opinion.
interesting. I can kind of see that, I
Like I'm
suppose.
thinking the comparison I'm making is not to Halo, really. It's to Doom, the new Doom, where you're like, I am a fucking god running around ripping.
Well known for its incredible AI, the new Doom games. No,
Yeah,
I think I get what you're
it's
driving
not
at,
good.
Colin.
It doesn't have to be good. It just needs to not break the immersion.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose perhaps the game would do well to just, if there's one Roger robot in the corner of the level and you've murderized everybody else, to just get rid of them and send you on to the next level.
And I think
Very
to some
interesting, very interesting.
I think to some degree, like the BS difficulty levels are kind of play into this as like, oh, like you don't want the entire like room full of enemies to like start rolling in on you because they're just gonna do so much damage and just kill you instantly. Like it sort of incentivizes you. Like let's say you're playing on hard and like you're gonna die in 2 hits to those axe wielding maniac robots. Like, you don't want a horde of those to come right at you. Like, you need some breathing space, room to room. I feel like something like Halo does this well because, like, there's doors in between the rooms and they're kind of segmented away from each other. So it's like each room is a separate set piece. But in this one, it's like, okay, well, there's so much risk of, like, all right, I'm gonna, like, peek around the. Like, I will, to this game's credit, it does have, like, that hitbox porn level of. Like, oh, I can see just like the tip of that guy's toe there. I'm gonna snipe it, and all right, now I've aggroed him and a few of his buddies around the corner. Now I can make this fight a little bit more manageable. There is that, but I think it's like that's kind of the extent of it. Because in like there's as you progress through this game, there are like these sort of like small room encounters, and then there's big room encounters. where those kind of, to me, just sort of feel like you're kiting the enemies around in a straight line fest, at least at the lower end of the difficulty spectrum. And then you got your big boss fights. But yeah, I think like between those sort of three systems, the corridor shooter, the bigger environment sort of mini boss stage, and then like an actual mini boss, and then the actual zone end boss, can play fairly differently. But again, like the enemies are just kind of running straight at you. They're not like bobbing and weaving. They're not like jumping away from your grenade projectile. They're not picking up your grenade and throwing it back at you. Again, these things take money, but would maybe change up your playstyle significantly if you had to account for that.
I don't know. To sum up my thoughts on this subject, I feel like the difficulty exists to give you a slightly better challenge, even if it is just the numbers getting cranked up, if you want to play more of the game or not. And it also exists so that you can, you know, pick a level that's a difficulty level that's comfortable to you. And this idea of all this extra sophisticated enemy behavior would, yeah, take a lot of time and money. And it also would make it a fundamentally different subgenre of shooter. And I don't think that's necessarily what they were trying to achieve, but I kind of get where you guys are coming from. But again, I think it's pretty bizarre that you would take a look at this game and think, oh, well, obviously this needs to be a sophisticated tactical robot simulation.
I don't think it needs to go that far. I think it just needs a light spice to it to make it just a little bit there. And again, with the Zone 4 expansion, we'll get that. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. But it doesn't need much. It doesn't need to be like a hardcore tactical, like...
Difference between Act 1 and Act 2, Act 2, the robots start doing, like, tactical roles, so...
They do roles. I personally think there's plenty of enemy variety and enemy behavior variety for this to be a decent shooting experience.
Yeah, I guess
beyond it's... decent, dare I say.
I guess it's, like, maybe Colin is really wanting just, like, a better Void Bastards, which is...
No, I think nothing could make that game better.
Okay.
My entire criticism is really just it feels weird to me that you can, that all the guys in the level aren't at least a tiny bit aggroed to you once like major combat has begun.
And like setting up blockades or barricades in rooms or whatever.
I just need them to like slowly walk towards me. the fact that you can find like guys around a corner who are just like, still not aware of the fact that there is a war happening in the room breaks my immersion a little bit. It's basically like if they can't see you, then they don't know that you exist. And sound exists. It feels it does break my immersion a little bit. That's all. I don't really need them to have like particularly more sophisticated AI.
Oh no! I totally, of this whole conversation, I find your opinion the most relatable. I get where you're coming from.
You know who else is relatable with this smooth transition that I got?
Ooh, our protagonist.
Well, I was gonna say a slicked back CEO, space CEO man is certainly a relatable character.
Who doesn't look anything like Will, we've determined,
and is definitely a legally distinct Elon Musk write-in surrogate for the game story, but
I don't want any association with that. So,
no, yeah, I think that like, all right, we've kind of dunked on this game's systems and stuff for a bit. I think this game's like overall like design and like narrative thrust to it is actually like pretty okay. And like again, it sounds like damning with faint praise, but like given this game's backstory, like the fact that it's even like there's a million ways it could have gone bad or like just sort of phoned it in or just like, ah, I don't know, we'll just throw this out here, whatever. Quit complaining. We gave you a better game, whatever. But your protagonist that you wake up in, or as this game, and your first, story act mission is to figure out what the hell is going on in this game? Who am I? Why am I here? Why am I up in space? What is the spaceship? What are all these,
you wake with basically amnesia. I can't tell, like, it's unclear to me, like, do you not know anything
you kind of don't really know anything about
except for what a gun is.
Yeah, you're like, yeah. Why am I so good at shooting guns? And the I also give praise to the voice actor who I don't know like how much warning they were given of like, hey, by the way, you got to do all these voice lines for this roguelike game that we're developing in 2 weeks. Okay, bye. But it's like, you know, a pretty good generic male action shoot 'em up voice, but it's done in like this gritty, gravelly, like cross between a Christian Bale Batman impression, Hellboy, and like someone who's just finished smoking a fresh pack of Marlboro Reds or something.
Like, oh, I think his voice is a slightly smoother than that. It's like if you took all of those archetypes but like made them into a radio host that had to have a little bit more listenable of some pipes. But yeah, I agree. I think he's doing a good job.
And yeah, like you're trying to go through hordes of robots, and they're just like these big telescreens everywhere in this colony ship that you are infiltrating, and you're just like, why are all these billboards saying the CEO says Mars colony ship ready, all systems go? This is a perfectly trustworthy individual. And your goal through Act One is to battle through hordes of robots and try to figure out just what is the purpose behind all this. There's cryogenic tubes everywhere, and you come across these little holo pads that these little Twitter post things that, again, I feel like there should have been maybe more done with, but maybe we'll see. Of people's experiences on the ship, and oh, things are kind of going sour. And as you get further into the ship, wait a minute, I thought this was a colony ship. What are all these war machines doing on here? And eventually, at the end of Act One here, this is your spoiler warning for you to quickly change to your favorite jazz radio station on your Bluetooth display before the big twist.
Let me reach for my Mingus real quick.
Well, Will, you'll like this as someone who's as a big fan of brain in a vat psychology philosophy. You get to the end of Act One and it comes up with like a little scanner thing to, oh, you gotta align your head, you gotta
facial recognition,
a mirror
to get through this security door. Yep.
But does facial recognition work if you don't have a face? And if you are just a brain in a vat, discuss. Actually, don't discuss. you come up to
the
this
answer
passes.
Is no, it doesn't work.
Scan for access. Align face. Oh God. Oh God. Is that me? Where the hell is my face?
In a jar.
And
yeah. Yeah, that was that's kind of a fun reveal that you're just a brain that's been stuck into a exoskeleton, FPS exoskeleton, which some days is what I feel like. But yeah, fun little reveal.
Our flesh mech.
Mm-hmm. I thought this was like, up to this point, I was like, okay, like, you know, it's this game's okay. And then I got to that point, I'm like, okay, this game is really okay. And
I felt nothing from that reveal.
Well, that's because you're an emotionless brain in a FPS mech suit is why. I also did, very very subtle, but I did appreciate like the mirror physics of like moving your character back and forth and it showing up on like the screen. And it like, you know that thing in like old video games, you walk up to a mirror and it's just like a gray thing that doesn't actually reflect the character because of resource consumption so much. Like it actually, like it was doing that. I'm like, okay, like that's a neat little detail that, like,
yeah, honestly,
2025, that we shouldn't be impressed by this.
No, well, that's the thing. They've gotten rid of it. I feel like real time reflections, like, you know, what Deus Ex came out.
It's like a pivotal cutscene moment. So like they're not rendering literally anything else except for you.
Yeah, true.
They're probably just doing the trick of you know how they did the mirrors in old video games, right?
Sorry, no, to be clear, we are not, me and Scott aren't literally impressed by the technology.
I see the impressiveness
10 out of 10.
In your eyes.
There's no other game's ever done this before. Yeah, you're right. It should be every game should have real time reflections. I concur.
At least in pivotal cutscene reveals.
Indeed.
But after completing this first zone, like you unlock a new weapon element. You unlock the plasma, a different purple element that you can use in future runs, and that punts you out into zone two, where you start running through a deeper section of the ship, getting some more information about your player character and what exactly is the role of the ship. Like, well, I thought this was a colony ship, and here's all the colonists, but all the colonists, like cryopods, are all broken up, and there's like these
they've been removing the colonists from the cryopods.
I know, yeah. And there's some cool like open like set piece arena designs that I kind of wish there were more of.
Yeah, there's something very distinct. The one with the floating platforms comes to mind.
That one was low on my list, but
I think but, like the big navigation room, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Oh, like, yeah, for sure.
There's some good art direction for the various rooms. There was one of them.
That's just beach.
Yep.
that's the colonist relaxation room, actually. But there is one that's just like this like shitty hallway with pits on it, and the player protagonist says, "For what possible reason could someone design this room? It's like it was made just to mess with me." I'm like, that's a little on the nose, but I get where you're coming from. And some of them are like, you know, pretty intense battle rooms and such. But you know, you're going through your zone two area, and you kind of battle through these set piece moments, and you come to, I think, the zone two mega boss. Well, before that is you know, I think you start zone two, and it's like big TV panels of like CEO denies rumors that he cloned himself. Man, this guy's an asshole or something. That like the protagonist, I'm just like, okay, I'm starting to get on board with this guy.
Yeah, I think the letter, it's like, I was wondering what kind of asshole designed this ship.
Which, you know, it's like, it's fun, like not like overstaying its welcome kind of humor that I'm just like, it fits what this game is going for quite well. Like, it's dumb, like lowbrow, but like fun humor that like the game kind of knows exactly what it's up for. And the game knows exactly what it's up for, because your zone two boss is giant, like Batman Bane level CEO clone. Where I'm just like, oh man, okay. All right. Let's kill,
you're fighting this big giant hulked out tech CEO
who's like shooting giant energy blasts like all tech CEOs do. And you know, like it's an interesting boss battle arena with this big central column that moves up and down or whatever, but and it was
mechanically
fine.
It's like, pretty good. It's the boss battle that I'd spent the most time on, and even though I had to go around and around with it like, I don't know, tens of times probably, it didn't feel too samey.
Yeah. But you kill the CEO clone, and you're this is where I think the game was like, oh shit, we actually have to like put some exposition and story stuff in here. Get that story dump truck in here and just let's start unloading.
Yeah, back it up.
And so you find all of like these other pilot suits that have like, for whatever reason, this at LT Jace underscore Talon 13-4, his last act of being alive was to send a Twitter message on this system that he says, "I was rushed by bots as soon as I opened the door. My suit is broken. They trashed my backups below, and I've lost the neural link to my body in cryo. God, if I can't merge my memories back, does this version of me die? We're not supposed to die." And there's other, like, you come into a thing that's very much like your ship, but it's all these other brains that you have seen from your body attached onto a wall. And you're like, your player protagonist is like, all right, let's start reading off the script. We only got one more act here to go. So they clone our brains, upload our memories, and it's like, I don't know, a remote pilot kind of thing? It's almost kind of like they were doing a table read of this game, and they're just like, all right, yeah, just we'll throw that in there. Sure, let's keep it going.
It just kept that audio, yep.
And there's more kind of screens that you kind of get information dumped on of like, you know, you are like an interspace pilot who's frozen on board, and they transfer the memories back and forth, and that's a hey, that's your reason why it's the game is looping. Hey, it's a roguelite now, get it? And you know, again, just
new brain, new guy.
Yeah. Please don't let my last message be a Twitter message saying something of like, I sure hope that that my brain is sent back in time, and please, good luck, brothers. Good luck to you, because yeah, I feel like this this Twitter system they had, they could have done a little bit more with, but you know, that you are able to link up with your ship, and all right, great, now we've I guess resolved act two. I now know that I'm some space pilot here to stop what's going on this ship. Great. And yeah, I think that pushes us out into act three. Colin, how far through act three have you gotten?
I've not done act three.
Okay. How much do you want spoiled of act three for you?
I don't care. Spoil as much as you want.
Okay. Well,
I thought we might get that kind of reaction.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm not particularly, this doesn't feel like the kind of game where spoilers matter.
Right. Well, big spoiler alert, because the mini boss.
Well, but real quick, sorry, we just let go by. What is the greatest plot explanation for why you're having multiple runs in a roguelike? I mean, Hades, get out of here! This is great. We got all these brains. Stick the brains into the FPS suits. You get the FPS meat head, the meat provided by the brain, cranium.
I mean, you got the Helldivers, where it's just like every life is just a different person.
It's just a different guy.
Yeah it's like you're not the same person having multiple runs. That guy that died, he real died. You're just you're just the next one on the ground.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Yes, the act three, what do we got?
Act three. So act two, mechanically, there's also like, you get this, what is like the two pier, or like the two D4 dice thing?
A D8? Yeah, what is the name of it? I don't know.
Anyway, act two, you get like this new synergy system. It's like the perk thing, Andrew, that you were talking about with the
octahedron
secondary.
Of course. We should have been able to guess that. Come on.
Oh,
guys.
Yeah. You get a floating synergy octahedron that allows you to pick like those things that you were talking about, of like these extra upgrades, like shooting
something
the
they
rockets.
Added between the last time I played it and between this time was that there are now synergies that can be built out of those superior items, out of the octahedron selection, that if you select, there's quite a few. And
well, this is an act three thing.
Three of them.
I think this is specifically act three. And another kind of one of my criticisms.
No, the upgrade items are in act two.
No. There's like a specific system called synergies.
Oh, yeah. All right. You're getting
that. Like you pick like two of these things of like of the octahedrons, and then based on like the class perks and stuff that you've been picking up normally, like then you get some extra super benefit of like, oh yeah, now you've got like super jump speed, and like, you know,
or every like time you have an AOE like aura around yourself that
like
I was very happy to see it.
And act three also greets you with a disembodied voice saying, don't believe the lies that you hear. Everything is just fine. Everything is okay. And meanwhile, there's like these goopy tentacles coming from the ceiling, and like it just descends into like quite literally Doom level body horror of demonic invasion type stuff. But you fight your mini boss, Mechanical Spider-Man, who's your former boss, who the voice in your head says he passed you over for promotion 6 times. And I'm like, yeah, okay. I want to kill this guy. Yeah. You're making some good points, voice in my head. I didn't like this boss fight at all. Cause this guy, and I was playing on easy mode. Like this guy should have been easy to take down, but this is like a mini boss where he spawns up like all these stupid shield generators that you have to like shoot, blast those down first. And as I'm talking through it now, I'm like, oh, I guess I could have just threw grenades at him. But like he's like in this invulnerable like mesh of all these shield generators, still challenging on easy mode, so it's no walk in the park. Like you're not gonna be able to, it would be hard to beat this on your first run through if you didn't quite know what you were doing, which I think is like, that feels right. Like maybe if you just fail barely on easy mode. Maybe that's the right level of difficulty. But you progress through, you get another giant dump truck of exposition where they're like, oh shit, we like, fuck, we can't get Act 4 out here.
We already paid for the voice lines. Might as well get them in here.
Yeah, right. And the doctor scientist guy who presumably programmed a lot of the stuff on this ship, he's sending out a general distress
call.
Yeah,
no, this is like the main designer of the computer systems that govern this ship. Yeah.
And this guy is saying, like, you know, a catastrophic, again, if any of this was hinted earlier, says a catastrophic EMP blast from Earth struck us, critically damaging all of our systems, and most importantly, our computer's core. I designed our core not only with synthetic parts, but organic, living tissue as well. The EMP, however, disabled the core's synthetic components, and in order to repair itself, the ship's most vital functions, the core had to compensate. In its distress, it redirected systems, machines, drones, to harvest compatible biological tissue from the only source it had, the colonists in cryosleep.
Yeah, there it is. So awesome. I loved that. And, like, this is presented in, like, kind of a slapdash. I'm sorry, developers. Like, low-effort way. It's, like, literally you're just looking at a computer screen and, like, this little... And you're watching the progress bar of the podcast go by, and it's like kind of a longish message, and the delivery is like kind of slow, and like, and it's like, and but when that was revealed, I was like, all right, that's pretty cool. All right, I that feels like a satisfying explanation for what's been happening. At least it was for me.
Yeah, and I mean, like, they could have spread this out a little better, but perhaps. At the same time, like, maybe it was just like, I don't know, we'll just throw something together. And It works well enough for this final act, because he basically says, like, you know, the ship is lost, like, blow it up, like, scuttle it, whatever you can do, it must be destroyed. And then the voice in your head is like, do not listen to Dr. Victor, he was limited. And you're going through, like, you fight another big boss who's just, like, kind of a giant mech robot, and then you progress through this body horror nightmare of, like, tentacles and things from the ceiling, big goopy pods everywhere, and you finally get to the big bad. I think this is, well, the end boss, even though it says sector 30 out of 33, which I think should kind of give you a hint, this big boss, the core, comes erupting out of presumably like the bridge or something. Like, you're really close to like the control center of the ship, and then out comes the giant brain, and you have to shoot and kill this giant brain with its giant brain tentacles, with some other monsters and stuff that are constantly spawning at you. And it's a fine boss fight.
The eldritch brain, basically.
It is a big eldritch brain. It's very reminiscent to our last D&D minisode that we did, where we were just fighting a giant beak brain. It felt very much in line with that. But you finally beat the big bad brain boss, and you're like, oh, thank God that brain is dead. Now,
I'm sorry, but real quick, to be clear, my compatriots here are describing a grell and an elder brain. An eldritch brain? What are y'all talking about? This
hold on. I wasn't saying elder brain. I was saying eldritch brain. You know, the
of course,
generic non-suable.
Oh sure, you got all the you got the brain, and then you got all the elder tentacles and everything. This is a pretty good fight. It's a two-stage fight, which I very much appreciated, because you know, heaven forbid, you know, you're overpowered and you beat it in the first try in like one go. Like that's a real flow and a real really kind of screws up the climax of the game. So you got the two-part battle. And of course, Scott, we are sprinting towards the climax of the plot climax. What do we got?
Well, you kill Pink Brain. Pink Brain comes back as Green Brain, shooting big green tornadoes at you, and you're like, all right, I'll kill that guy. That's fine. And then you're running to the ship's self-destruct zone, and the voice in your head is saying, no, the colonists. They're still alive. Their consciousness are a part of us. I've tried to explain this to you. On Mars, we'll give them bodies like yours. We will find a way. And your player protagonist is just like, God damn it. In between smoke breaks, presumably. If I blow
the
up this
brain
ship,
is smoking. Yeah.
No, your protagonist is. Or yeah, well, yeah, the brain. They're all brains. It's all brains in a vet. Aren't we all brains in a vet?
He's still smoking. He's vaping. Just directly into the brain folds.
Into the helmet. Yeah, yeah. Just filling the helmet with
he's hot, hot smoke. Hot potting.
Mm-hmm.
100%.
But now, you're presented at the end with this choice. Like your player protagonist is on the fence. Like, do I listen to this disembodied brain voice and give this ship a chance and let it go to Mars to start a new life and let all of these, the consciousness of all of these dead colonists live like my body, ? Or do I just blow it the fuck up?
Now, unironically, Scott, I'm curious, were you at all swayed by this argument? I thought this was a pretty nice little sequence.
I thought it was the high of having fought
the giant brain multiple times at this boss battle, which is pretty bombastic in a good way and exciting. And then you're running down this hallway and the ship's kind of falling apart and you're having this dialogue with the core. And yeah, it's the argument that is presented by the tech, by the designer who did that, does that info dump reveal, is that, yo, we can't let the core get to Mars and colonize Mars and take over. We're going to have this, like, you know, this monolith, this horrible mega half biological, half technological AI monster on Mars. Like, God knows what it could do. And then, but
it's
then
almost
the,
something
the
that
argument,
you would like send a Doom Marine in to solve
100%. But then the argument that the core is making to you is like, hey, no. Yeah. We still have these consciousness of the colonists. They are still alive in some capacity. We are going to give them bodies. And also critically, if you just leave and don't self-destruct the ship, then you of course will be saved. You can go back to Earth and you can live your merry life. And so, or basically, yeah, you can decide to, you know, protect the human race and blow yourself up and blow the ship up. Or
is life worth living if you're just a brain in a jar?
Well, that's why I sprinted without thinking twice to the self-destruct option. And I'm like,
yeah, me
no,
too.
No, I'm you're we're going to hell tonight, big brain. Yeah. I'm not going to let this set up into a Doom prequel. And yeah, well, at least for me, Andrew, I don't know if you've picked the escape pod option before, but I did self-destruct in my one.
I also self-destructed. I like IRL was like muttering to myself, like the protagonist, like, God damn it. I got it. We can't let this thing get out of here. We can't take any chances. No half measures. Self-destruct. Uh-huh. But I did appreciate the choice was kind of I thought that was a well done sequence, much yeah. better than just, you know, shoot the big boss with the big number and then the credits roll,
which makes me wonder what the Zone 4 setup is, because extreme spoiler alert, at least with the self-destruct ending, things blow up, but oh, I've woken up again. And You
there's some hand-wavy explanation, like my ship, which was docked with the colony ship, got blown loose by the explosion,
and I just happened to survive re-entry onto Earth. And you were greeted with, I will say, like quite a well artistically put together, definitely not Halo Combat Evolved copyright infringing moment of out in the almost like the Pacific Northwest, big mountains, city on the horizon. You're like, damn it, the robots have followed me to Earth. And you get up to the ridge and you're blasting them and you say, oh great, you see this like city with like robots shooting lasers at it, and you're like, well, screw it, I've got this. And you know, you start running in to presumably start killing all those robots to save Earth, or maybe Mars, ? Depending on what the other option is. I don't know. Yeah, I think if that's the setup for Zone 4, like I'm interested to see what could be done in this big, like it's a big outdoor environment. You're no longer in like the corridor shooter mania zone. And I'm like, okay, let's see what you got. Let's see what this Zone 4 will be. My guess is
world survival crafting game.
Yeah. Big blocky Minecraft
extraction
graphics.
Shooter. This is, they finally figured out what a slipped extraction shooter in.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, the epilogue sequence I enjoyed, and I think is an exciting preview to what could potentially be done with Act 4.
Yeah.
Music's okay. I thought it was like pretty good music in some cases, somewhat repetitive in others, but not. I thought it was better than average.
Yeah, I started a new profile and made sure to pay attention to the music, and it was better than I remembered. I didn't think it was necessarily bad. I just thought it was kind of bland. But then once I was paying attention again, I was like, oh yeah, you know what? Actually, this is pretty good.
It's not necessarily something that you're going to be humming to yourself later, but I think it does well to add energy to the flow state.
Yeah,
for sure.
Which is probably all that you're really going to get out of a game like this.
Right. It's yeah, quality synth soundtrack.
Well, do we have any other final thoughts that we want to add before we hit that self-destruct?
What is the best element?
What is the best element?
I don't know. Here's a problem. Is a couple of the elements feel pretty samey, I'm afraid. I'm sorry to say. I'd be hard-pressed to tell you what the psychic element actually does other than, like...
damage.
AoE damage.
Did you damage? Oh, my God.
Yeah, what do you know? I think having a frost grenade would come in very clutch, especially against like mini bosses, because you could freeze them potentially. Generally speaking, I like the spectacle of the fire and like setting guys on fire and doing damage over time and being able to like explode them to deal area damage. Very nice. What about you?
I quite liked the lightning one because, I would just abuse the enemy AI, get them all running into a conga line down a hallway, and then I would just, like, get this huge, it's like a zap chain going down the hallway, and they would just all explode and be like, when you get a, like, a machine gun with, like, the extra fire rate and, like, the big mag, and it's just, like, it is just like you're holding down a buzzsaw that's just shooting electricity beams out. I'm like, this game doesn't need to be, like, any... I know that we were like wanting some extra like level of spice or depth to like the enemy AI, but like the aspect of like thing explode on screen, like monkey sees action, neuron activation works really well for that. Let's see, just looking through some of the other elements on here, you got your cryo damage, which freezes stuff, fire damage, which is like damage over time, lightning, which does like chain damage, plasma, reduces the target's attack rate, so it makes them slow down their shooting.
That's right. Is that the purple one? What's the purple one?
There's two purples.
Void.
What? Void's, are you fucking kidding me?
Plasma is purple with pink in it.
Yeah, it's hot purple, and one's
void,
dark purple.
Void is bright pink, and...
Oh, I have idea what I had. Three.
You had Void.
And, yeah, Void reduces the enemy's damage. Psionic... adds a chance to stagger the enemies.
Right.
They're pushed back, damaging them, and applying fracture.
What's the best? There's a best, right?
I think fire. It depends. It depends because,
it's
fire. The answer is fire. It's when you hit the ignite or the explosion or whatever, combust, whatever the one is that makes them explode, and you headshot the guy, first hit, and then explodes and kills all the other guys around him. It feels real good.
But doesn't work for those like big open environments where enemies are spawning in like completely different parts of the map. Yeah. Anyway, I think like it worked really well. Like the different what are these elements? Jesus. I think these things also worked really well whenever like one was proccing the other, so that way you could like get freeze to like freeze someone in place, and then like. The lightning chain damage would like go through them, but
the best is rainbow.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of wish that there was like any explanation of like what the fuck is this shit and why is it in this game.
That is a point. Yeah, like that's like they address why you are respawning, but they do not address why there are guns that are infused with Thor's lightning. Like it's pretty wild, but it does offer. A lot of fun variety and quite the spectacle of seeing all of these different elemental procs happen.
Yeah, for sure. I guess that's the risk that you run when you're on Milan Grusk's booze cruise to Mars.
Is that the name? Is that the name?
No, what is his name?
It doesn't matter what his name is.
It's very important. His name is this one just says CEO. He does have a name of some generic white man name.
Is it John Scores?
Colin Smith? Oh my god, no.
Oh my god. That is I'm sure it's something very inspiring. And we're gonna find out.
CEO Clone Man.
What is
it? It really doesn't.
Sure.
You can follow him on X at @BigBoss_CEO, which
that's good.
Is definitely the most humble. No,
but also you should not be on X. Never mind. Go ahead. Sorry. I have a strong opinion here, but
Before we go into ratings, which is fast approaching, I do want to call out or not call out. I've already demonstrated my lack of knowledge about this game's systems. But the biggest glaring hole in my knowledge is there is a mechanical term in this game called weak point, and various perks and loot and what was the other one? Augments. There we go. Affect the amount of damage that you do when you hit an enemy in the weak point. Can anyone tell me how to identify where the weak point is on any given enemy?
Is it just the head?
See, headshots are a separate mechanical term.
The big floating like robot Kako demon knockoffs, like shooting them in their central eye, I think is their weak point. And so I think it depends per robot. Generally,
it does.
Head,
yes,
but,
that's what I have determined. Again, 50 hours of this game. Finally, I just had to kind of like Google, like, okay, is there a tell? And supposedly there's like a glowing effect of some kind.
That sounds right.
And I'd be hard pressed to point to a diagram of each enemy and be like, ah, yes, there's the weak point. But the fact that exists, kind of neat that there's both headshots and weak points. I appreciate that.
There's weak points, but there's also like interesting synergies that are just like, look, we know that like you have the giant hip fire minigun. You're not going to be able to hit that weak point. So what if you had a synergy that was like you did extra damage for not hitting their weak point to kind of balance it out, which I can appreciate. I don't particularly like the idea that I have to upgrade it 10 times in a row, but
we're shooting their arms. Should be able to blast their arms off.
That would be nice, given that the robots especially.
Well then, is it time?
I think it is time. I think it's time for us to finally hit that. Are we gonna save the game, or are we gonna self-destruct it here with our rankings? And I think
we'll throw it to Will to find out.
Yeah.
All right, folks, 6.5, and here's why. I gave Enter the Gungeon a 6. This game's better than that.
Wow, slightly, this game must kick ass. Sorry, the floor is yours.
You can send your
better than Enter the Gungeon. There we go. That's
grogpodzone@gmail.com.
Here are the four reasons why I think it is capped. It can't get above 6.5.
Oh,
it has maximized its ability in the category it's in. Bullet hell, automatically limited. You can't do well in a bullet hell scenario. For me personally, I like bullet
hell. This man wants a tactical shooter, and he's calling this a bullet hell. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Game dev has scrambled his brain. 1,000 pardons.
All right, we gotta let him finish.
I have never liked bullet hells. I will not like them. I'm a bullet heaven person. First-person shooter can be great, given the context, but FPS, you're limited there, too. I don't like that experience in general. I know we played Squad, but there are limitations around FPS and fun. Bullet Sponge, I said that's who I am in the very beginning of this episode. Bullet Sponge enemies, where you shoot them in the head, and the bullet passes through all of what is observably their CPU, and they're like, oh, I'm fine. That's a problem for me. Bullet sponge enemies are bad. and no real build diversity. We've talked about this a little bit, but I don't think that there. I think that you kind of pick a thing and you stick with it all the way through, and that's the build. There's no, I mean, like, yeah, you could pick a different thing and go all the way through, but there's no branching. There's no, that doesn't appeal to me. And so, granted, 45 minutes. So I will caveat it with that, but I feel pretty confident. I shouldn't, but 6.5. That's
based off the back cover that I read of this book. I can tell you with 100% certainty.
Thank you.
You know, it's
it is a 7.5. Right, yeah.
Yeah, it's please. Okay to not like a game. That's totally fine. It's okay,
hey, 6.5
like
is in the recommend. That
is in the recommend. That
is recommend. 6.5 is above that. Are you kidding me? This game has gotten off easy, to be honest.
That's the first thing I grokked as soon as you said your score. Yes, that it is in the would recommend will category, which. Appreciate is that. Its own benchmark worthy of praise.
Colin, are you saving the ship?
I am gonna save the ship. I think they should be able to go live on Mars. They'll live in peace. Also, Mars is a hellhole. It's if they want to do something with it, great. I don't want to live there. I'm gonna give it a 7.5. I think that it is quite a fun game for what it is. I don't know if it has the level of depth that I would want to spend a significant amount of time into it, but it does achieve a very good flow state, and it has I was surprised every time I finished a run how strongly the pull to start a next run was. Be like, oh bullshit, I can't believe I died there, god, I was so my build was so good, I gotta go. So like it had that feeling a lot, which is, I mean, that's a pretty strong recommendation. I felt like it was a little bit bland. But I don't know if that really matters. I haven't gotten far enough in the game really to fully view the story. But from what I've heard on this podcast, it's fine. I think that I would have exactly the same amount of fun if the game had no story and no explanation for why you're on the ship. But so, I mean, I think 7.5, which is honestly, that's like, I try and do a pretty, my ratings are pretty much bell curve centered at 7. So it's above average. I think it's a fun game to play. I had a good time playing the multiplayer yesterday with you guys. So yeah, I'm going to give it mostly a recommend, especially if you're like this style of like hero blasty shooter where you get to go on the power fantasy.
For me, I'm going to actually self-destruct it, but I'm going to self-destruct Will's opinion and give it a 7.7. I think this game, like, it's, what I say earlier, it's very okay. I think this game is like maybe suffers from like looking a little generic at first. And like, I'm not super thrilled about like the like tiny incremental grinding stuff. Like that kind of stuff, I think could be reworked. It's not something that's like baked into the fundamentals of the game, maybe. But when this game is shooting on all cylinders, it is really shooting on all cylinders. And it is definitely like a dopamine explosion of just seeing number go up, shiny candies fall on the ground that I can pick up. And oh boy, that feels really good. And yeah, I think that like it just feels very smooth to play. I think the builds in this game are actually kind of interesting, because if you don't have a decent build going, you will be punished for it. And the times where I'm like, oh, like I can actually build around a sprinting shotgun automatic bullet refunding type deal, I don't think I've ever seen in a game before. So it actually has some kind of interesting, unique takes on it for something that on the face of it looks a little generic, but is maybe a little deeper than it initially appears. So 7.7 for me, just above Dot Age and tying with Blueprints for what it's worth. I think it, a totally okay game.
All right, well, it falls to me to explain once again, because I've been gone for 2 weeks, that the ranking system used to be a stack ranking system. And so to try to fit that, because my co-host who I adore so much, and insisted that that's what we're doing. So my scores are messed up. So please don't judge me too harshly.
Judge.
So I've given Dead Zone Rogue 8.11 Andrew points, which puts it in my top 10. And I was initially going to give it a much lower score, but I thought, you know, my top 10 needs a FPS in it. There were no FPSs in my top 10. Ridiculous. Got to fix this. So I thought, you know, well, the legacy of Doom, won't be too offended, if I put it smack dab in between Doom RL and Jupiter Hell, Dead Zone being my new number 8. One thing that we didn't quite have an opportunity to mention because we got waylaid by an interesting conversation about enemy behavior. I think part of the disagreement stems from my appreciation of retro FPS games and how you're less looking at the like squad AI and squad behavior and more at like the individual classifications of enemies, and that like a good retro FPS experience has a roster of enemies with set distinct behavior. And then it's like up to the level designer to place those enemies in an interesting and engaging way. And it is up to the player to recognize and understand those interactions and how, and those behaviors with those different enemy classifications, and use the right, you know, strategies and the right weapons to dispatch them and deal with them. Now, and I think that's what Dead Zone has put together, is a roster of fairly distinct creatures that you can count on behaving in specific ways. So, hey, I can deal with this particular melee guy in this way. I can deal with this particular ranged guy, et cetera, et cetera. The robot that has a BB-8 circular droid embedded in its head, when I kill it, if I don't headshot it, its head's going to pop off and float around and become its own floating enemy. And you as the player understand, you know, what that set and predictable behavior is going to be and how to go about dismantling that challenge. But something specific that we didn't get to discuss was that the way that these arenas start is that you enter a new room, of which a typical run is like, you know, 20 to 30 rooms.
Oh yeah.
And you are in stealth mode, and you can just walk around the level and get the lay of the land and figure out like, okay, what enemy configurations, what classes of enemies am I dealing with? I know how they're going to act. So I can make some predictions about how these different fights are going to go. And it's this wonderful opportunity for the player, this wonderful bit of player agency where you get to pick where this FPS level starts, where the spawn in E1, M1 beginning is. And that just little piece of design is really smart and very engaging in a somewhat not immediately obvious way. And especially when you're into a long run, maybe on a harder difficulty potentially, and the challenge is there and a lot of chips are on the table because you're getting close to finishing the particular zone for the first time, taking the time to strategize and figure out where you're going to start is really great. And something that you don't get out of a lot of shooter experiences, that tactical, that slow sort of tactician planning portion. And that is really delightful to me. Furthermore, what's really delightful to me is to learn this design, this development history, and how the developers were able to take a somewhat disastrous situation and take all of this hard work and these pretty assets, these beautiful guns, these great sounding guns, these fun, engaging, fun to shoot and blow up robot designs, and remix it, not even remix it, revitalize it, and resurrect it, not unlike the protagonist in the game, into a really great gaming experience. I think is commendable and inspiring, And that's why I, you know, think this game deserves to be in the top 10 here. And I suppose it'll probably get mentioned in the Omega Bowl, and I look forward to that time. So 8.11 points out of 10.
Yeah. Your mentioning of the starting cloaked thing is something that I wish for our similar games segment, that the number one game on here, I wish that it had. I really wish RoboQuest had that system. RoboQuest, I feel like, is a stay tuned and a half for sure. It does feel very much like this game, in a kind of a slightly different style, very much a different art aesthetic. But yeah, I think like that starting cloak thing, I'm just like, oh man, I really wish RoboQuest had this. Maybe it does. Maybe that's something we'll find out about. But RoboQuest, top on the list. It definitely feels like Dead Zone, but Borderlands / You Are the Robot. Lots of robots in these games. Deadlink, that we mentioned earlier, I think Andrew has some experience with, but maybe more of kind of like a punk end of the spectrum, cyberpunk type shooter. We have Witchfire, which I think is kind of been rolling up the charts in terms of critical reception, with that one being maybe more explicitly of an extraction shooter, not PvP, but definitely PvE extraction shooter type, but way more roguey in its design. There's Space Beast Terror Fright, which I think is supposed to be like a co-op squad based like dark horror theme, but still like kind of like a corridor shooter, but more horror oriented. I put Sulfur on this list mostly because Andrew was coin flipping between Dead Zone, Rogue, and Sulfur. But indeed, from what I played at PAX last year of it, I'm like, I could see this being stay tuned for sure. Our previous episodes, Void Bastards, Returnal, I've come around a lot on, super, super stoked for Saros whenever that comes to PC, God willing. And yeah, so, oh, some other ones that have come out recently, Void Breaker, which looks interesting. Jump Space, which is like, it's not quite as much of a corridor shooter as this game is, but it is like, what if FTL, but you were first person shooting during all the FTL type stuff? I'm getting some good eyebrow raises there. There is one game that I was like on the tip of my tongue this whole past week. I'm like, what the hell was that game called? I saw it being played at PAX West 2024. The guy was playing it and just hogging the kiosk the whole time. I'm like, I want to play it, but he's not giving up his thing. And I couldn't remember the name of it until I went on YouTube to find someone's like video of them walking around the show floor from a year ago. And I could just barely see out of the corner. I don't think this game has been well received, unfortunately, but similar, at least in this space, a game called Unyielder, which is kind of it's more of a boss rush style, but it's still an FPS. And from what I saw the guy playing of it, I'm like, that looks pretty cool, but I don't know, it's getting kind of dragged in the ratings, so we'll see. Yeah, so that'll check out those for some similar game recommendations. And as we wind down here, and as we solicit your rage bait emails to our Gmail address, grogpodzone@gmail.com is where you can send in all of your takes agreeing with me as to why Returnal has a better FPS systems than Dead Zone Rogue. Or you could look at all the stuff that I post from time to time on Mastodon, grogpod@gamedev.place, where I just got a prize package from the UFO 50 Cherry Rush stream that I was spectating. They sent me some cute magnets there. Grogpod.zone has all the ratings, stuff that you can find, including links to Will's game / app that is just releasing as of today. You can find links to that there in the about page.
maybe
it's worked its way there, or at least your feeder link of like sign up here thing.
Yeah, if you go to the site, I don't want to mention it. This is not the place for that. There just doesn't matter. Yeah,
we'll fix it. Yeah, I'll edit that out in post. Don't worry about it. But yeah, that's gonna wind down our new number 27 out of the 81 games that we've ranked thus far with Dead Zone Rogue. 27, not a bad overall landing spot for it. But Colin, what are we looking at for our next game here?
Well, I would say that it's truly similar to this game, but it does have a couple of similarities in that it is a shooter game. You get to walk around the level before it starts, and you get to blow up some interesting mooks. It's Orcs Must Die Death Trap, which is a weird third-person shooter, hero shooter, tower defense, maze building game. I don't know. It's kind of a weird combination of things, but I've played it.
Multiplayer too, right?
Hmm?
Multiplayer.
Oh, yeah. Exclusively multiplayer, in my opinion. So I'm excited to play it with you guys.
Sweet. Well, that's going to wind up our Dead Zone Rogue episode. And playing us out from here will be some electronic beats. We're slaying some electronic robots.